All right, welcome back to the show. Thursday Night Football winding down, under 4 minutes to play. Chiefs, a 28-21 lead on the Chargers, and they have the football back here deep in their own territory after the kickoff. Let's see what Mahomes and crew does here. Mahomes in this game, if you're paying attention to that MVP race, listen to this. He's had a good night, not a great night, good night. 23 of 33, 238 yards, two touchdowns. But more importantly for him, I think, if he's going to win this award, no turnovers, no interceptions. And that's the big one. That was the knock against him. He had that five-turnover game against the Rams. Been better since then. We'll see what happens here. We'll see how Drew responds on Monday night. We'll keep you updated on that game. Our Blue Runner Foods opinion poll. What team is the worst matchup for the Saints in the playoffs over in the NFC? Rams, Bears, Cowboys, Seahawks. I want to know how you vote on this. My vote would be for the Bears, followed probably by the Cowboys, and then the Rams. I think most of you would probably vote for the Rams on this one, but we'll see. A lot of people saying the Seahawks are a threat in the NFC. I don't know if I buy that. I just think the back end of their offense, back end of their defense, Trey Flowers and Shaquille Griffin just aren't good enough to stop teams like the Rams or the Saints, that passing offense in the playoffs, but who knows? Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll in the playoffs, certainly nobody would want to play them. Speaking of Drew Brees here, talking about him in the MVP race, well, ESPN, their magazine, has ranked Saints quarterback Drew Brees 15th among the world's 20 most dominant athletes. We have that story online at WWL.com right now. They ranked in ESPN, the magazine, the 20 most dominant athletes. The criteria was how successful they've been as far as win losses here compared to their other contemporaries. Obviously, if you got a gymnast like Simone Biles, who is number one on this list, it's not just about wins and losses. Brees is 15th on this list. Mahomes, a couple of spots behind him, at number 17, which, this is just reactionary. I love Mahomes. I think Mahomes has a chance. I don't even think it's a chance anymore. I think he's going to be one of the elite quarterbacks in the next decade and a half in the NFL. He is going to be mentioned, just like Aaron Rodgers was for the last 10 years. He's going to be in that conversation with Carson Wentz, with Russell Wilson, with these younger quarterback stars out there, is among the best in the league. I just think I don't see any regression here. The stuff that he's doing with his athleticism are just absurd. But to have him number 17 on the most dominant athletes here, I don't know about this. I love Simone Biles at number one. And a lot of people, non-Olympic year, not paying attention to Simone Biles. And if you don't know who Simone Biles is, she's the U.S. gymnast who won all-around gold, led the U.S. to gold a few years ago in Rio. All she's done since then is, I think she's won, four consecutive world championships that she's been involved in. It's just crazy. She is the most dominant athlete on the planet right now, and I think ESPN, the magazine, got that right. I like Drew Brees at 15, and they justify Brees here by saying, this is a quote from ESPN, the magazine, he's the NFL's most accurate passer with a completion percentage of 75.7, a career best. He also leads the league in passer rating at 120.8 and total QBR 83.5. At age 39, Brees has been, like one of his passes, relentless and on the money. All right, good quote there, ESPN, the magazine. Other Saints news. Saints may play in London or Mexico City next year, and the reason this has become a hot topic today here locally is because three of the eight teams the Saints will play on the road next year. Well, I guess it's three of the six teams. Three of the eight teams will play on the road next year. Three of those teams have scheduled games in London or Mexico City. I think there's a pretty good possibility that the Saints end up in London again. They've done it before. London knows this team, especially if Drew Brees comes back. So the fan base is there, especially if the Saints make a deep run in the playoffs here. Would not be surprised at all. And remember that here's the Saints opponents, by the way, that are over there. Jaguars, Chargers, Rams, Raiders, Bucks are the teams that are playing overseas or out of country, I should say. Of those, you've got the Bucks, you've got the Rams, and you've got the Jaguars on the Saints' schedule. Now, I don't know if, from a competitive equality standpoint, if the league would want maybe the NFC's two best teams or two of them playing a really important game that would hamper Los Angeles to take that home game away when LA had to come here this year, and you might see this game again, a rematch in the playoffs. I don't know if they'd like the competitive disbalance there or throw in this game in London, but I'll tell you what, you want a premier game here, one that would generate incredible interest in that emerging market in Europe or even in Mexico City. Yeah, that's it. Throw that game there. I don't know if Saints-Jags, with how bad the Jags have been this year, or Saints-Bucks, with how bad the Bucks have been this year, relatively, would really move the needle in Europe or Mexico City. But, hey, I never see. If I'm a betting man, though, and you ask me, where's that coin flip going to land, heads or tails here, I think it lands on the side of the Saints playing a game out of country again. They've done it before. Again, I think it's going to happen again. Also, the Saints, they added a tight end, Eric Swope. He didn't practice, and then he was released. He was claimed off of waivers, and I'm sorry. Look, Eric Swope, I'm sorry to laugh at that. I know this is your profession. You're going to land somewhere, though. We know that. You're already scooped up on waivers by the Saints. You'll be on a roster again. Your career will be fine. But it was a little funny here that the Saints picked him up, and then they released him. He had a knee injury. So the Saints let him go. Injury report today, Teron Armstead still on it. Kurt Coleman, Andres Pete, and Ryan Ramczyk all practiced but were limited. Panthers, six players did not practice. Their safety, Mike Adams, a very important part of their defense, rested, kind of a veteran's rest day, you would think, with him. Does have a little bit of a wrist injury. Thomas Davis, that's a veteran's rest day. Graham Gano, Julius Peppers, Chris Clark, and Rashawn Golden. All out. Cam Newton's still dealing with that right shoulder injury, and Kaywan Short's been dealing with a calf injury for quite a few weeks now. So the Panthers certainly a lot more banged up than the Saints heading into that Monday night game. So the Chargers with a football back here and a long pass downfield. I think it's connected to Keenan Allen. So here we go. Chargers trailing by 7, 2.5 minutes to go, have the ball at about the Chiefs' 35-yard line. See what happens there. We'll take a break. We're coming back with Carter Bryant. We'll talk a little bowl season, a little LSU as well. I'm Seth Dunlap. This is the last lap on WWL. Now, Phillip Rivers doing his Pat Mahomes impressive. 4th and 8, he finds Travis Benjamin over the middle of the field. Pretty good coverage, but that is a 4th down conversion. 40 ticks and counting left, and it is 1st and goal right at the 10-yard line for the Chargers, trying to keep their hopes of an AFC West title alive. Pass into the end zone is batted away. We'll see what happens there. Haven't talked to Carter Bryant in a couple of weeks. We were kind of off last week for prep football, and the week before that, I don't think we linked up either. So, look, it's been a long time, but we're very ready and pleased to welcome back in the jack of all trades here. Carter Bryant hosts a little talk show, a couple of talk shows, I think, actually, on 107.1 FM, 1400 AM in South Arkansas. He is an LSU grad. He's a stand-up comedian, and he's our guest almost every week. What's up, Carter? How are you?
Seth, what's going on, man? I love watching Phillip Rivers play the position of quarterback. No, it's Patrick Mahomes doing a Phillip Rivers impersonation. Mahomes is a young buck. Rivers has been doing this since I've been in diapers. I mean, come on now.
Yeah, and here's Phillip Rivers. See, this is where I don't really understand this. There should have been a flag, but you got 20 seconds left, and then Phillip Rivers gets up and starts complaining to the officials and just wastes 10 seconds. I don't know what Phillip Rivers is doing here. This is the problem. Okay, now I'm going to go on a Phillip Rivers rant. I wasn't planning this, Carter. We've seen this way too much in his career. You want to know why I never considered him right there with Brees and Brady and everybody else? Because this kind of nonsense. Like, what are you doing here? You think Drew Brees would do this, take off his helmet with 24 seconds left and let, 15 seconds run off the clock here with your complaints to the referee? Come on now.
Yeah, well, you know, he knows he has to go home to 15 children and being a dad is just too much for him. I think that's it, Seth. I honestly do. But no, he is right though. Like to be honest, he that was a helmet sure. hit. I think that's what he's doing. But especially now, you know, the yardage isn't as important as the time that you're wasting in that situation. So yeah, but it's unlike college. You know, they don't do a booth review for this. And Saints fans are probably listening right now saying, well, you know, I don't know exactly what's going on, but I know a few weeks ago, if there was a booth review, Jalen Smith would have been penalized for that hit on Alvin Kamara. So There needs to be the same college rules as there is in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree with that here. Two shots into the end zone before it's over. That one is out of the back of the end zone. And, well, there is a flag here. That was a late flag, so the Chargers will have first and goal at the one. Probably two shots at the end zone. 8 seconds left, maybe three if they're lucky. All right, Carter, let's talk a little LSU here. First of all, just general thought here. Does playing UCF worry you at all? Because it seems like this is a game where LSU has everything to lose here. UCF has nothing to lose. This is another game where if they win, everybody's going to say, oh boy, maybe they should have been given a shot. If LSU wins, it's like, well, they're supposed to win this game against a group of five teams. Does this one kind of worry you at all?
See, I actually disagree with everything. I think it's actually flipped. I think all the pressure's on UCF. You know, if they win this game, then everything that they've been saying over the last 2 years is justified. I mean, they'd be two different SEC schools that are top 10 recruiters. I mean, that's a pretty big deal. That's a big game for them. And if you're LSU and an LSU fan, let's say LSU does lose to UCF, then it does concern you that you lose two consecutive bowl games, but also it does make you say, well, we weren't all there. You know, our bags are already packed. This game, I mean, we were in the college football playoff conversation. Once that was done, it's over. And LSU fans would already be looking forward to next year. You know, you got a second-year starter, a lot of recruits coming in. That'll be first-year contributors. So I actually think all the pressure here is on UCF. And I think UCF not only bears the weight of their own team, they bear the weight of all the group of five schools. So we'll see what happens with that. And I understand there's a lot of people that say, well, LSU is playing for the SEC, and LSU is playing for the Power Five schools. Well, not so much. You know, most people normally view conference supremacy as a whole. UCF has far more going into it, which is why LSU fans should be concerned.
Okay, you're kind of changing my mind here. It's good stuff from Carter Bryan here, at Carter the Power on Twitter, talking a little LSU. Greedy Williams and Devin White, the two disparate and opposite sides of that spectrum. Greedy not playing, expected to be a first-round pick, assuredly, has a kid to take care of, and Devin White is going to play. And Coach O, in his press conference, he didn't really dance around the subject. He said he was disappointed in Greedy. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, and I would be too. If I was a coach, you'd want your best corner to play. But I also think Ed Orgeron is understanding of what exactly is happening. I mean, this guy's doing something for his kid. I mean, he's doing something for his own personal health, and he's not the only one doing it. I mean, this is a growing trend in college football, and it's not really hurt a few players that have first-round grades like Greedy Williams. I mean, take a look at someone like Christian McCaffrey or Leonard Fournette, who both sat out bowl games. I mean, they're still top 10 picks. I don't think it hurts Greedy Williams all that much, and I think Ed Orgeron's justified in him being a little disappointed. But in the grand scheme of things, Greedy Williams is doing the right thing for himself. And LSU fans, I know they're frustrated. I know there's some LSU fans that are listening and saying, hey, listen, play your final game for your team. I totally get that. But put yourself in his shoes. I mean, he's had more great games for LSU than he's had bad games. And he's an All-American corner. Let him get that one game for his own personal benefit, and then we can all move on with our lives.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm with you there. I see both sides of it. And if you say, well, Greedy Williams, he won't have any back. Yeah, he's going to have backlash in public perception. So that's what the hit he takes from this, but I certainly get his decision, no doubt about it. Phillip Rivers has thrown a touchdown to Williams in the right side of the end zone. It's under review, and we'll see what happens here. This is close. Ball was bobbling maybe a little bit. I don't know if there's enough to overturn it, but who knows what Al Riveron will say about this one. And I think Phillip Rivers just signaling they're going to go for two here, trailing by one. So this is the new way that analytics say you do this, especially on the road. So we'll see what happens here. It's under review, and we'll see they do decide to go for two coming back here in this football game. I want to say about Devin White too, Carter, that it's not unexpected to me that a player does this. Everybody is acting like, oh, this never happens in college football before, but we just saw, what was it, Andrew Luck 5 years ago. Remember, he was going to be the one overall pick, and he comes back. So I think this is more common than people realize. It doesn't happen all the time, but I certainly admire Devin White for doing it. And I'm talking about him coming back next season, as all the reports are now that he's kind of leaning that way, Carter.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot on the line. I mean, he could break a lot of tackles records at LSU. And, you know, he enjoys being a Tiger. I mean, this is a guy, you know, you got to keep in mind, he was a controversial guy all the way back in high school. He had his own off the field holdups. We don't have to get into the details of that, but LSU still stuck with him. LSU still was very much a part of their recruitment. They said, "Hey, we appreciate you. Just come on in." And Devin White probably feels like he owes LSU a lot. So I totally get that, and that's just his character. I mean, you know, you go back to last year, the reason why LSU didn't fold in after the Troy game, from what I've been told, LSU was Devin White was the biggest leader in that LSU locker room. So it's a big deal when someone of that caliber says that he's going to stay around, especially someone who is probably the best linebacker in college football.
Yeah, great analysis here. Carter, can we hold you through this break real quick? I want to get your thoughts on the expansion of college football playoffs, which is a hot topic again.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so Carter's going to hold on. There it is. So the review went in favor of the Chargers. Call in the field stood, and they went for two and wide open. Williams right side of the end zone, and Rivers lofts it up. So with 4 seconds left, Chiefs here are going to stun the Chargers, it looks like, barring a miracle in Kansas City like we saw in Miami a couple of days ago. If you're a Drew Brees watcher for MVP, it certainly doesn't hurt his case if the Chiefs end up losing a couple of games and even if they lose that race for the AFC West. But remember here, this wasn't for the AFC West lead. Chiefs will still have that second tiebreaker, even though they will be tied in the standings with the Chargers. So it is still the Chiefs' division to lose. All right, welcome back in. It's final. The Chargers take their first lead of the game with 4 seconds left after the two-point conversion on the Chiefs, and they win 29-28. So both teams now 11-3, but the Chiefs still with the lead because of the division tiebreaker. They're 4-1 in the division, and the Chargers are 3-2. So they'll need the Chargers will need the Chiefs to slip up maybe next week in Seattle or the final week. I think they're in Denver. We'll see what happens there. Winner of that one's actually probably also going to win the top overall spot in the AFC. So big time stakes there, Chargers and Chiefs. Let's bring back in Carter Bryant here. Carter, I want to get your thoughts here on the renewed discussion, which is great because I know we talked about this on the program a few weeks ago about the expansion of college football playoffs, and all of a sudden it is a massive topic the last couple of days, expanding to 8, and then should conference champions get the automatic bid? Those are the two hot topics here, Carter. What say you?
No automatic bid. I'm a little more open to it if you do stretch it out to 8 teams. I'm fine with it then. But if you stretch it out to 6 teams, especially if you don't – well, you can't do it if you have 4 teams. You know, 6 teams is out of the equation. I think 6 is a perfect number in college football. Reward the 2 best teams with buys, so on and so forth. I do think you do stretch on to 8 games eventually. If people are wondering, is this actually going to happen? Yes, it's going to happen. It's more money. People love the playoffs. I totally get it. But what makes college football special is that every regular season game means so much. Keep in mind that if you don't have auto bids with the conference championships, Michigan would be in the college football playoff right now. They would be there, and that would not be a good thing. We just saw Michigan lose their big rivalry game. Not only did they lose a rivalry game, not only did they lose the bragging rights of that, they also lost their chance at the playoff. That's what makes college football special. And there's a whole lot of different things that I think are going to change, Seth. I mean, I think for one, I think the Big Ten might get rid of their divisions the same way the Big 12 does, because it will make for a better conference championship game where you don't have an 8-4 Northwestern playing a 1-loss Ohio State. I think that's something that could happen, and that would obviously switch a few things up. So there's a lot of questions. The big thing that people need to know, though, is that it will eventually go to 8 games, and that it is not a good thing. What makes college football great and what makes it better than any other sport that we have is that every regular season game holds so much weight, and that's what adds to the drama of the best sport in America.
I love the discussion with you on this. Fans who have listened to the program, you and I have talked about this. We know we're on opposite sides of this issue, which is totally fine. I think that's what makes the conversation great. I kind of disagree, though. What would you say to my argument that I actually think that, and I know people always say this, I actually don't think every regular season game matters. I don't think it's mattered for a long while for the premier dynastic programs in college football. Alabama, the regular season games haven't mattered for them. They can lose a game, not even make their title game, make either the BCS title or the playoff. Has every game mattered for UCF? I hear that all the time, Carter. And I'm kind of rolling my eyes. No offense intended to you, but just when I hear it, I just say, really? I don't think that every regular season game matters for Alabama, Ohio State, LSU, Oklahoma, Texas, Florida, Michigan, and these programs. I really don't.
Yeah, because they play the toughest schedules. And you also have to factor in that eye test is a part of it. And you also go by strength of schedule, and you go by the analytics, you go by S&P Plus, you go by any kind of metric that you want to. That's part of it. Now, according to what happened last year, I don't think Alabama should have got in. I really don't. But that's a different story for a different day. Here's the big thing for me, though, Seth. And honestly, I understand because I'm a big SEC guy. I don't watch a ton of college football outside of the SEC. I think the biggest thing for me, though, is I just like the fact that LSU was out of the playoff picture because they lost a really tough game to Florida. And that game just added so much more value to the weight of that game. And I think that's what makes it so great. And I understand that schools that don't have the same name brand, like the Washington State Cougars, didn't really get that much love when they were only a one-loss team, and they had a few impressive wins. And UCF's not a big-name school. They don't play in a non-Power 5. Obviously, there's a lot of that. And, you know, if you are a big Power 5, that does draw more neutral eyeballs, and I'm sure the committee plays in that in a factor. I totally understand it, and I get that. But the feeling of someone feeling just a little bit left out makes college football great. It really does, because it just intensifies the drama and intensifies everything that we have. And even with a 14 playoff set, the average margin of victory in playoff games so far in the semifinal rounds has been 22. So really, the final two teams that get in, a lot of them have gotten blown out. So, you know, it begins to question, well, what if a one plays an eight and a two plays a seven? It will get even worse. I was like, what would be the reason for adding all these teams to begin with?
Yeah, we will give you the last word there, Carter. I know we'll have this conversation a lot in the future. Thanks so much, buddy. We'll talk to you again next week.
Anytime, Seth. And good to hear from you again. Glad you're doing better.
All right. Yeah, thank you. I've been battling a cold the last couple of weeks. Carter Bryant at Carter the Power, stand-up comic. Find him coming to a city near you, and of course host on 1400 AM 107.1 FM in South Arkansas. And yeah, I've been battling a severe cold last week, and then it's kind of carried over to this week, but we're better. Chargers win. We'll talk about that, and Nick Underhill coming up next year on The Last Lap. All right, welcome back to the program again. Chargers beat the Chiefs. Fantastic Thursday night game, 29-28 on a two-point conversion with 4 seconds left to win it, and that was the first time the Chargers had a lead in the football game. Earlier this week, we had a sighting that was as rare as Halley's Comet or maybe a Carolina Panthers win over the Saints recently. I don't know. Nick Underhill joined the program, and by popular demand, here's that interview again. All right, thanks again to Nick Underhill. Again, that was earlier this week. We'll take a break. Back with our Moment of Zen highlights from this crazy Chiefs-Chargers finish on Thursday Night Football. All right, thanks to our guests tonight. It's The Last Lap in the books again for this Thursday. Jake Madison, Rafael Esparza, and Carter Bryant also replayed the Nick Underhill interview. Thanks to Logan Falgu, our studio producer, Tim Zimmer, booking the show, Diane Newman, and Todd Manessis, our program director and assistant program director. Thanks to you for listening. I'm Seth Dunlap. Back tomorrow at 7 o'clock, special time 7 to 10 tomorrow on The Last Lap. Handing it off to Beyond Reality Radio. And as always, here's our Moment of Zen. Marshawn Lattimore, an interception.